Welcome to the AquariMax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 90, recorded November 28th, 2011.
Hey, everybody.
That was a weird voice you just did.
That's okay.
Do it again.
Hey, everybody.
Okay.
It's one of my puppet voices.
Hello. Hopefully we don't all have post-turkey blues.
No. See, a lot of people who listen to us don't even have Thanksgiving as a holiday, so
see,
it's not even a concern.
You don't have that.
But a lot of people do.
You haven't put on 10 pounds over the weekend.
No.
I don't think I did either, but, you know. Well, alrighty.
We're excited for episode 90.
90! Only 10 more, and then we'll reach 100. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay. Last week we asked if any of our UK listeners managed to make it to the Aquatics Live Expo, and there were two people.
Two people that mentioned it, yes.
That mentioned it, that they were able to go. So Stuart went.
Stuart in London.
Okay,
Yeah, he went. And he put some things up on Flickr, which he posted to Facebook, the AquariMax Facebook page. So you can check those out. He said he got a kick out of it, and he took several very interesting pictures. One was an absolutely gargantuan goldfish.
Really?
Yes.
Is there something next to it in the picture so you can tell how big it is?
He said it compared in size to a honeydew melon.
Wow.
So
like that big around?
That's large, yes.
Seriously,
it was a rotund goldfish.
I want to go see the pictures.
Okay, we can show you those pictures.
That's a fat goldfish.
Yes, and he had some clownfish, quite a few clownfish. Mm-hmm. He found Nemo and all of Nemo's relatives.
Oh, good.
And then he also found there were aquascaping pictures.
Ooh.
And some really nice ones, in fact. And even herp tiles.
Neat.
There was a bearded dragon and several other herps in there. So if there are those of you, I know there are some of you out there who are also herpers. Like
that's
mix a herper.
Terrible. I don't think you should say herpers.
No, it's okay. That's what they're called. Yeah.
Okay, well, they should not call themselves.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Herptile enthusiasts.
Okay, herptile.
It's worth it to say all the syllables.
Okay, herptile enthusiasts out
there.
Thank you. Who are crossovers. You know, you can check those photos out, too. Well,
crossovers cool. Like Spider-Man and Batman together.
Yeah, something like that. So thanks, Stuart, for taking those pictures and for letting us know that it was worth the visit to Aquatics Live. And Cy, one of our new contributors on Facebook, Cy from the UK also went, and he liked it as well.
And where in the UK is Cy? Or do we know?
Oh, I don't know if we know exactly.
Okay.
But
Mystery Cy.
Yeah.
And we have a new contributor this week from Denmark.
Yeah, our first Danish contributor, as far as we know. Mm-hmm. And his name is Holger. And he says, first of all, thanks for a great show. I just stumbled upon your podcast on iTunes and heard them all, episodes 75 through 88, in one go. Great listening. Nice to hear so many relevant topics and fun to hear you guys answer. Very charismatic.
Thank you.
My question is, yeah, thank you. We're glad for the positive feedback. That's lovely stuff. My question is, how can I get the episodes 1 to 74 on my iPod, seeing as they're not in iTunes? Well, the best way to do that is to go to aquarimax.com and click on podcast up near the top of the screen, and then all the podcasts will show there. And you should be able to right-click on them and download them.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there's also
And you can just click through the pages to older posts until you get all the way to the beginning.
Right, because the first one will be the most recent post. But down at the bottom of the screen, there's a little... it says previous, and you click on the link for previous, and it'll just go back all the way to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to episode 1, back in the day.
Which
may not be...
Yeah.
May not necessarily represent the opinions of the management. Whatever. We like to think we've improved since then. And if we haven't, we might as well just stop now. Okay.
He also says, can you recommend any other podcasts, audiobooks concerning aquaria and aquariums? Anything would be of interest.
Well, there are quite a few, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but not since episode 75, I think. So we'll give you the rundown really quickly here. Blue Zoo. Check that out.
No, it's a podcast.
That's a podcast. Blue Zoo is one of the most famous ones in aquariums. Pet Fish Talk is another big one. Aquariumania is another one. That's part of Pet Life Radio. There are a couple off the top of my head. Well, there's three of them off the top of my head. Talking Reef, if you're into saltwater, is good. And there are lots of others, too. One thing you can do is go to iTunes and when you see where, you know, where you found Aquarimax, for example, you go to the Aquarimax page on iTunes, and at the bottom it'll say, you know, people who like Aquarimax also listen to, and you'll get a whole bunch, and Blue Zoo will be there, and Pet Fish Talk, and Talking Reef, mm-hmm. and Aquariumania, and so on. So that'll give you a start, hopefully, those four. Yeah.
He has a little PS, too, which I think probably you guys have also wondered this same question. I'm sure it has plagued you mightily. He says, P.S., do you record your programs in the shower or behind a waterfall? Sounds awful! Smiley face.
Hmm. Well, at least it was couched in positive and smiley terms.
Yes, and the answer is yes.
We actually
record behind a waterfall.
Or occasionally in the shower. But there you go.
Sometimes we stick the microphone into the fish tank.
No, we're working on that. We're well aware of
we're
the
not
difficulties.
Working too hard.
But the problem is, we have a crummy microphone.
Yes. And we're smiley working face. On it.
Yes, we have tried to replace the microphone, all to no avail, because the microphones that cost a lot more than this one that we have attempted to use have turned out to be even worse.
They don't work. I don't know what it is. They just won't. They won't work.
So until we are in a position to get a condenser mic, which is, you know, several hundred dollars, we can't do a whole lot about it.
Sorry.
We're going to try to do that. I have been working with some other things. I've been using a different type of compression of the audio for the last three or four episodes. Hopefully it's a little different from the ones before that in a positive way. If it is or if it's not, if you've noticed any difference, either positive or negative, you can let us know. But hopefully the compression is helping some, a different way of doing it. But anyway, unless you know, someone wants to drop, maybe Santa Claus should bring us a condenser mic.
Yeah, if any of you are in the audio business and want to play Santa Claus and send us a microphone for Christmas, that would be okay.
Yeah, well, so that's where we are, but we will try, if we can, to get a better mic when we have the budget to do so.
Yep.
All right, but thank you, Holger, for joining us, and we're glad you enjoy the show, and we'll see what we can do about that.
So, next we hear from Mick in Carnforth again. Hello, Mick.
Yes, Mick has been catching up on the last few shows, and he said, great feedback on the salt issues. The only problem I have had with using marine mix salt is that my pH level skyrocketed as our water is very soft with little buffers. I guess there's not much buffering capacity in his water. If I were to keep a brackish tank long term, I would use a mix of some marine salts and plain rock salt to help keep the pH stable. Huh. So maybe the idea here is that he did mention that he uses the dishwashing salt for hatching brine shrimp and so on, which, you know, I don't think anybody sees a problem with that. And he's indicating here, from what I gather, that maybe he doesn't use it long term. It's just a temporary measure. Maybe he's using it to acclimate his mollies from whatever he got them from, because mollies can live in full strength seawater and they can live in freshwater. And so maybe he's, you know, gradually weaning them off of the salt water so he can keep them in fresh water. Although if his water's very soft, he'll probably have to have some buffers in there, because mollies like more alkaline water. But
you do to put buffers in the water?
Well, there are several ways to do that, but one way is to just use the marine mix. But it sounds like he's having problem with pH levels, because if you put salt water mix, marine mix, in very soft water, there are the carbonate buffers and everything in that salt marine mix. And it will cause the pH to go up. And
he's
that
having
is
problems with his
thing.
pH being too high already,
well,
is what he's saying.
Probably not so much that his pH is being so high as that he's going from very low to very high pH.
So the transition is too fast.
And that's a problem, because, you know, brackish fish enjoy a high pH. They're used to buffered water. But the problem is, if you go from water with a very low pH to water with a very high pH, yeah, you can have a lot of problems. Basically, the issue is, the most important issue, I guess, or one of the most important issues, I should say, is that ammonia is much more toxic at high pH levels. So if you have a little bit in your water, and it's not doing your fish any harm at a low pH, and you go to a high pH, you can suddenly have all this toxic ammonia in the water. Before it was ammonium ion, which isn't nearly as bad. And so that can kill your fish. Another issue is just the pH, as we talked about a few episodes ago with Brian, mentioned that Is it just pH? Because, you know, it's the acidity in the water. You have, you either have a lot of acid water or you have alkaline water. That chemically is very different, and it has a different effect on the fish and their skin and everything. You can burn a fish just by changing the pH, and changing it quickly, especially, can cause a lot of damage. It takes a while for fish to adjust, and that's why it's best, generally, when you have a fish at a particular pH, because your water is at that particular pH and stays around that pH, it's better to try to keep it there and have the fish adapt to the pH, or have the fish over time be adapted to that particular pH, rather than trying to get it near their ideal. Let's say, for example, you have neon tetras, and they tend to like water that's a bit soft and acid. And soft and acid water, you know, is good for neons, but let's say their water, as far as a pH reading is concerned, is a 7.4, which is a bit on the alkaline side. Rather than trying to adjust the water constantly by adding chemicals to it, for example, to try to make it a lower pH, to try to get it below 7.0, it's better to have the fish adapt to 7.4.
How do they do that? If they like their water, you know, at a 6.9 instead, how do they adjust to it being at 7.4? How do they get used to that?
Well, it takes time. It can be done gradually. If you mix, like we talked about acclimating shrimp a few episodes ago, you can do it by gradually, you know, mixing the two waters. It can be done.
So you don't mean if they're already in the tank and you measure it and it happens to be at 7.4, you just add the...
Well, there are people who will take... They'll see the tank, oh no, it's 7.4, let's add some sort of chemical to reduce the pH. Not a great idea, because the buffers in your water, if you have buffers in your water, will eventually make it bounce back, and so on. And so,
and it's the switching back and forth.
Switching back and forth is worse. But if they are gradually acclimated to, I mean, you know, you don't want to go to extremes. You don't want to keep neons in water of a pH of 8.4. It's not going to do them any good. But it's, as long as you're avoiding extremes, it's better to be stable than try to get an exact number in general. And I think that's what Mick is talking about.
Okay.
That he's worried about the pH bouncing up and down, and so. But it sounds like he's not planning on keeping any fish in brackish water long term. So that may help alleviate any problems that we would otherwise maybe be concerned about with the differences with the salt that we were talking about earlier. And hopefully that made sense. Okay. Now, Mick has also put a picture of his scud tank. Now, scuds, for those who may be uninitiated, We discussed this a bit with Mick before. They are crustaceans, also known as side swimmers, amphipods, sometimes called freshwater shrimp, although there are so many species of those these days that name has kind of fallen into disfavor. But there are lots of names for them, but amphipods, scuds, it's all the same thing. They're a crustacean that is laterally compressed, and they sometimes swim on their sides. They are very good fish food, and that's why Mick is raising them. He got a colony recently. He says they're all doing well, and the colony is already growing. They love the leaves. I believe he said he put beech leaves in there. And I have added some more lately. I do add a pinch of flake food every other day, but otherwise they're very little work. That's been my experience, too.
So what's in the beech leaves that they like?
Well, they are not particular about what they eat.
Oh, okay.
Organic matter, you know.
Stuff that's plant, rotting animal, at the bottom whatever. Of the pond kind of idea.
Yeah, so it's kind of the detritus, you know, the vegetable matter that's being softened by bacterial processes and so on. They'll come and eat that, so that's what they're doing. And they eat this part of their natural food because in the ponds and streams where they live, leaves fall in, they eat them, you know,
okay.
So on. And I've fed them anything from aquarium plant clippings to algae chips to whatever, you know, pieces of zucchini. They're not particular, and my experience is, like Mix, that they are very little work, but they're very good fish food.
That's very good.
Yep.
That's probably a good place to take our break. This
isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
And Mick also has attached some pictures of his prize male Molly. So we will put those pictures on the resources
page. What
kind
of Molly is it?
Looks like a sailfin.
Mm, what color?
Sort of that greeny, coppery color.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very cool. I'll have to show you the pictures. We'll put them on the resources page. And he says it has fantastic colors, and this evening he spotted a few fry scuttling around behind a box filter and plants.
Spiffy.
Yeah, so it's always fun. I did have to treat the tank for ick a couple of weeks ago, so I hope that the trace of any treatment in the water hasn't affected the new fry. Hmm.
Now, what does the ick treatment sometimes do to fry?
Well, it depends on what you're using, but generally, fry in general is just more sensitive to whatever.
Any medication. Water.
Some of the ick medications are copper-based, mm-hmm. and you know so on. So it just depends. I'm not sure what kind he used. I'm not sure specifically what it would do to Molly fry. I know that most inverts are very sensitive to copper. It's, you know, pretty dangerous for a lot of them. So I would be surprised if my Mick had used a copper-based one just because he keeps a lot of shrimp and stuff.
Right.
But then again, since he may be doing it in a tank that is free of shrimp, he may have done that. Basically, it's always a good idea to be cautious with medications, and I'm sure that's what Mick means here.
Mm-hmm.
And now... shrimp news. Mick has also included some pictures of his shrimp acclimation tank. And this is a show guppy tank, which currently houses around 6 tiger shrimp, which are very cool looking. They are. I checked the pictures out. I'll have to show them to you. They have stripes like tigers.
Cool.
And are doing well. I think that they are the same species as red cherry shrimp. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mick, but that's I'm pretty sure. I actually have had a few of the wild type cherry shrimp that have a little bit of tiger striping to them. Not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of the reason I think that. Hey, he's got nitella and a couple of blanched beech tree leaves and an air stone and small lava rock to complete the setup. And it's a cool setup.
Neat.
The show guppy tank is it's quite a small tank, but it looks nice. And it's a good proportions that he's used and so on. And he's also looking forward to hearing how the tryops work out when they arrive in the UK. Which, by the way, Nigel, they're coming. Had a little bit of a delay. I left them at work.
Over Thanksgiving.
So, I will... We've got them here now, and we're going to ship them to you, so we'll
sorry
to go.
About that.
We just have to hope that customs will approve them, but I think they'll probably be fine. So, there we go. And, okay, that looks like it's about it for Mick's email. Thanks, Mick, once again. We've got a couple of bits of news that we should mention. One of them is that we have definitively identified our goldfish, all of them, as male. Two of them, when we purchased them, they were in breeding condition, so it was very easy to tell that they were males. And the third was not when we purchased it, and so we weren't sure, but now... We suspected, due to the fact that it chased females around and so on, but we have now definitively identified it as a male. And how do we do that, may you ask?
We give it a female name, and then it will be a male.
Well, that's what happened in this case with this one, but actually, in this season, usually in spring and in fall, if goldfish are subjected to somewhat natural photoperiod, which they are because they get... They're probably about... How far away would you say they are from the western window?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe 6 or 7, 10 feet, something.
Know. Yeah, they're halfway across the room from the window, but light streams in there
it's
in the evenings.
It's a pretty big window.
Right. And on the other side of the room, we have an east-facing window.
Of the same size.
So the photo period is somewhat natural. They're also... They've got a, you know, electric lighting as well. They've got fluorescent... T5 tube above their tank, but if they are subjected to a natural photo period and they're fed properly and so on, they'll go into breeding condition, usually in the spring and in the fall, and that's what they have done. Just recently, the last couple of weeks, I've noticed they all have the breeding tubercules, which are little spots on their gill covers. They are operculae. That's gill covers for those of you who may wonder what I'm saying. And so they have these little white dots there, and also on the front rays of their pectoral fins, they have these same little tubercules, little spots.
And that's how you tell.
And that's how you tell. The males have those.
Interesting.
The females don't. And so we've got three males in that tank, and they're chasing each other around in frustration, I imagine, wondering where the females are. But they are, they're all males.
Poor, which is, lonely bachelors.
In some ways, that's good for us, because then we don't have to worry about eggs all over the tank all the time.
Making a mess.
Yes, and just, you know, getting eaten and all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of fun to see that they're all happy and doing well in the tank, and responding to natural cues of photo period. I don't know. What more can
that's,
I say about that?
You know what? We should have some kind of advertising campaign for that around Valentine's Day of how to get your chosen mate to respond to photo periods. I don't know. What do you think?
A lava lamp.
We could make some cards about it, submit it to Hallmark. We'll see if they accept it.
I don't know how well that'll go, but
we'll see. Photo periods. What other words say romance more than photo period?
Well, I have to admit that one's pretty catchy. Okay. So, other than that, what have we got? We've got our...
We set up Gwen's tank.
We did. Our daughter, Gwen, has...
She's five.
She's five, and she has wanted a beta of her own for some time.
Mm-hmm. And this is what she's asking Santa for this year.
Yes. So we found this aquarium, which we couldn't pass up, being... It was $15?
It was $15.
For a 29-gallon tank, or approximately 29-gallon hex tank.
And
a stand.
A
nice wrought iron stand. Mm-hmm. It looks nice and everything. So we went and we cleaned it up this weekend, got it all ready to go. We had to use water and an algae scraper and an algae brush to get the inside clean, because it was a bit... had some hard water stains on there and so on. And you never want to remove those unless the tank is wet, because if you do it when it's dry, you're sure to scratch the living daylights out of the glass.
Then it will be ugly.
So we filled it up. We had to, once we had tested it for waterproofness, which we did in the garage, we emptied it, brought it upstairs, and cleaned it out using the algae scraper and the algae brush. We cleaned the outside with Windex, being very careful not to get in the inside, and now it's cleaned up quite nicely, hasn't it?
It looks great now.
Yeah. So now we're deciding what to do with it, exactly. We haven't decided whether we're going to cycle this tank or just rely on water changes, because one beta in such a big tank, you know, that's a lot
There's
more...
There's not a whole lot of bioload going on there.
It's going to be a diluted bioload, so it's not going to be too bad, but I think it would be nice to cycle it with some gravel and cycle it before we get the fish.
Fishless cycling.
Yes, I think that would be
We need a song about fishless cycling.
We'll try to think of one, I guess.
Yeah.
That might be kind of catchy.
Maybe we can do a Christmas carol about fishless cycling.
Yeah. And we're also deciding if we should filter it or not. Because, you know,
it's
you don't always need to do that with betas. And if you do, you need to make sure the filter isn't too crazy.
Because they don't like it.
No, they like more, you know, still water. So we're deciding exactly what we're going to do. We're definitely going to heat it. We're going to put a 100-watt heater in there, because we want the water to stay nice and warm, nice and toasty, around 80 degrees. But, you know, putting a background on a hex tank, that's going to be interesting.
It doesn't fold exactly right.
We're going to be thinking about how to do that. If we want to do separate panels for each of background, different things like that. We're thinking about all these fun things and about what we're going to do for the cover, because it didn't come with a cover. Didn't come with a glass cover. Didn't come with a plastic cover. Didn't come with any cover at all.
It is uncovered.
And betas can jump.
Audacious.
Yeah, so either we're going to leave the water level fairly low in the tank, you know, give the 6-inch space or something so the betta can't jump out, or perhaps we will cover it ourselves. Maybe get some Lexan cut or something
like
that.
At the hardware store.
So we'll see.
So we were wondering if you guys have any fantastically creative ideas for backgrounds on a hex tank. Send them in and let us know.
Or any other fantastical ideas you've used with bettas.
Yeah.
Why not?
Or any other fantastical ideas that don't have anything to do with backgrounds or hex tanks or betas, but it's a fantastical idea and you want to send it in,
right?
Go for it.
So, until then, ladies and gentlemen, may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.